welcome back to another Ramble Cast. Here we are in December. Happy December, Alex Navarro.
Happy December, Vinny Caravella.
Thank you very much. Happy December, Brad Shoemaker.
I hope to remember this December.
Yes.
I thought I might have something better there, but let's move on.
Do you remember November?
Not at all.
Do you?
It's kind of a blur.
Not in the slightest.
Did you Rectober October?
Now we're talking.
Did you? I don't know.
Is Rectober a thing?
It should be. Yeah, if it's not.
Can we make it a thing?
I don't know why Rec. I don't know. Rectober.
It's October, so you need more of an off sound, I feel.
Yeah,
like really
Rocktober is definitely
Rocktober,
a thing.
Rocktober, yeah, that's an easy one.
Shocktober. Shocktober is a thing. Knocked over for October. Here we go. Yeah,
nice.
There we go. Knocktober. Hi, everybody. Welcome to December. This is going to be our last of couple of Ramblecasts here for 2022. See ya. Oh, 2023. Jeez. I was just looking at tax stuff for 2022. So the 2022, still in my brain. By 2023.
Did we ever even settle on a pet name for this year?
For 2023?
It's 2020 Glee. Everybody's happy.
That's absolutely not true.
I think the years no longer deserve pet names, I think.
That's right. Yeah. They don't earn them anymore.
That's where we're at.
I feel like in December, most of the time for the last few years have just been a race to get this one over with and mm-hmm. just move.
Maybe
the
next year will be better.
Yeah,
actually,
right.
Totally different.
Yeah, maybe the next one. We'll see. Alex Navarro, how are you doing? How's your practicing going? I know you got a show coming up.
I do. Show's this Saturday. We had our last practice this past weekend. I'm happy to say I only got one blister this time.
Okay.
You can see it there on my hand.
Uh-huh.
The thumbs held up. That was the important one. So
okay.
No shredding of the skin there. The calluses have formed. I'm good on that front. I think I'm ready.
Okay.
I think we're ready. I did get a little nervous when our lead singer came in and was like, hey, just so you know, the show's almost sold out.
Ooh.
It's a 400-person venue.
Okay. So... That's good notice for anybody who might be showing up at the door.
Yes.
It's possible.
There may still be a few tickets left at the door, but it's probably not going to be a lot.
Congratulations. So. That's fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Look, Sick of It All brings them in. We're just kind of there and happy to be there.
Do you know if there'll be any kind of recording or like is somebody getting hired to do a recording? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
So there is a guy in the like kind of national hardcore scene, Sonny. He goes by the name Hate56 on YouTube.
Okay.
Bands will frequently hire him to come to their gigs, and he does by far the best video and audio recordings.
Oh, nice.
Of like live bands that are not like, you know, top tier concert bands that I've ever seen.
Well, that's a big endorsement.
Yeah, he's great, and he has a Patreon. If you're interested at all, like patrons can vote on like which sets go up at what time and stuff. But like, he's an incredible chronicler of you know, I'd say like mid and like local level bands. But I don't know if anyone has hired anyone for this show.
Okay,
bare minimum, our guitar player usually just sets up an iPhone somewhere or a GoPro and just like at least we got something.
Okay. Cool.
But yeah, I have no idea if they've actually like gotten anyone for this show or not.
How long is your set?
30 minutes.
Hey, that's like a pretty good set.
It's respectable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For an opener, it's not bad. Usually sometimes we get like less than 20, depending on the show. So
this is just a one off, right?
As far as we know. As far as we have decided, yes.
Yes, anything is possible.
You'll reassess after.
Yeah, there's been some loose talk about maybe just, you know, recording the last songs we had floating around before before we kinda went on hiatus for a while, but nothing is planned at this point. It's like, we're doing this show. We're doing it for Flora, also to play with Second of All. and we're just going to see where things go from there.
Awesome.
What is the biggest crowd you have ever played to?
Oh, let's see. So the biggest show, like in terms of like number of people that were at the show, was definitely a festival gig I did in the late 90s. But the number of people watching us was not very high, I will say. It was maybe less than 100.
Oh,
but that was
okay.
The Ska Against Racism tour in the late 90s, the Irvine, California show. Big Ska scene down there. So there were a lot of people at that show, but they didn't give a shit about us. And I don't blame them, frankly.
Irvine loves to skank.
Yeah. In terms of actual crowd watching us, I'd say it's probably the time we opened for Run DMC at the Phoenix, because that show definitely sold out, and that venue holds like 900-something people.
Oh, all right. That's getting up there. That's yeah. Like I'm trying to like put it in context I can understand. That's kind of like ballroom at PAX size, I guess.
Yeah.
Or something in terms of number of people. Not like the size of the room, but the number of people.
Yeah.
Those ballrooms were probably like 1,000 people, right?
I mean, that place used to be an opera house originally and then became a movie theater before it became a music venue. So it has that like big open floor, some seats in the back, and then the big balcony up top. So like there's definitely a lot of ways you can stuff people into that place.
I always wonder about, as somebody with like debilitating stage fright, and how people like big bands that are playing to like what is a big arena crowd, like 25,000?
I think even like 10,000 would be considered a pretty good sized like arena crowd. Like, I think they go between like 10 and, you know, like the close to 100, depending on the number, on the size of the arena.
Like, but if you're in like a football stadium.
Yeah. Like, right. If you're Paul McCartney playing at fucking Wembley, you know, that's a very different thing than like, let's just say you're playing the biggest arena in Indiana, you know?
Sure.
I'm just like, how do you do that? I mean, not whatever. The more you do anything, the easier it gets, of course, but still just like how?
When you're on stage, Alex, because I know the stage lights sometimes are just blinding. Can you even see the crowd really when the lights are all up?
Depends on the venue, but usually even when it's very well lit, like heavily lit and you can't see too far in the back, I can at least see like the first few rows of people kind of up in front of the stage if they're there.
Right.
So,
okay. And, like, you're doing a thing, right? Like, you're doing your thing that you're hopefully comfortable doing.
I'm never completely comfortable on stage when I'm playing. I'll be completely honest with you, because as much as I have done it, and as many shows as I have played, and as much as I have done music in front of people, I am the worst memorizer in the world, and I always have been.
Uh-huh.
So there's always a moment in just about every set I've ever played where some kind of brain fart happens, and I'm like, I don't remember what fill I'm supposed to be here, so I'm just going to fucking bang something out and see what happens.
Sure.
And, you know, 9 times out of 10, I pull out something that doesn't sound like garbage, but the 1 out of 10 times, like, well, let's just move on.
That's why people love live shows.
It's probably a nice thing about drums, right? As long as you keep the beat, it's probably not going to be that noticeable.
Yes.
It's not like, you know, it's not like being off key or like, you know, wrong chord or something. It's not quite as like nails on chalkboard to the ears.
No, the very first show I ever played with a band, I fucked up bad on the last song and got completely off time from everyone else. And I was 14 at the time, so I was way too panicky to like understand how to reconfigure, so that whole song just sounded like garbage, and I felt real bad about it. That has never happened to me since, because I made sure in my mind, I was like, I am never going to let that thing happen again, and it hasn't, thankfully.
My son has been playing the drums a lot, and we play with him a couple of times. I will say, when a drummer fucks up, it's devastating.
It's very hard to come back from that.
It fucks everybody up, like the bassist, the guitar, everybody.
And there's a gradation of that, like, oh, he dropped a stick, but he's still keeping
no
the beat. That's fine, no big deal, you know, whatever, you can roll with that. Oh, that fill got slightly off, he sped up a little bit to catch up with everyone else. No, that's fine.
It's more inconsistent time.
Yeah, when you can't keep consistent time, or you are literally on the wrong beat, then there's just not much you can do there without restarting.
Yeah, So Max will, my son, what he has a problem with now is speeding up, slowing down, which is fine, you know, like, okay.
I still do that occasionally. Yeah, yeah. Like, if I don't have a click track, I'm still capable of doing
that. But the worst thing is, he can't always fit the fill into the time for the fill. And so he'll go a beat or two over the fill, and then that throws everybody off in a way that is really tough to come back from.
So that's just a thing that comes with practice and learning that, like learning where your borders are for fills, and like where you have to be back to the regular beat. You know, sometimes when you're just bebopping, you're just trying stuff and learning, like, you don't, it's hard to work within those borders.
Yeah.
That's something that you just develop over time.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. I'm still very nervous.
Talking about somebody shooting your show got me looking up, like, what could somebody do to just show up with a phone and shoot your show?
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of reminds me of the stuff from like the city walking tours I keep talking about, where it's like I imagine like some $10,000 rig they're walking around with, you know, and then I'm like, oh wait, it's just an iPhone 15. I have landed on a page of smartphone gimbals.
Oh sure, yeah,
$140.
Sure,
$140. $90.
Just keeping that like a steady cam.
Here's the budget pick. The Jiyun Smooth Q4 is a $90 gimbal for, like, is a gimbal a steady cam?
Pretty much, yeah. Just
the
thing.
Suspension in there?
Usually they have like an arm, like an articulated arm or something that keeps the phone from vibrating around as you're walking.
Is there some kind of suspension or shock absorption in there?
Depends on what you get, but I've seen them for DSLRs and stuff too, for phones. You know, some have like pneumatics, some have springs, some have just, you know, tension.
These things are just like a handle with an arm, like
wait,
just like a little wand.
Wait, really? Wait,
there's nothing is like mounting to your. I always think of something like some kind of steady mounting to your body. Somehow.
That's because the cameras were so damn heavy.
This thing is literally like a pistol grip looking thing.
Yeah,
it's just a tiny little arm that the phone goes on.
But it should have something where when your arm goes up and down, there's some kind of shock absorber for the camera to keep it fairly steady. That's usually what I've seen those gimbals do, is they absorb the motion of your arm and the walking to keep the phone fairly steady. But
yeah,
I would also not be surprised if iPhone video software has some
like
kind of stability.
Stabilization software.
Yeah,
oh,
like
definitely
real time built in or something.
There's a crazy amount of weird processing going on. What do they call it? Computational photography. Did you see that thing going around with the lady in like the wedding dress on Twitter?
No.
This weekend?
It's blue. It's gold?
It's good. No, it's a woman. It might not be a wedding dress. She's like trying on a dress in a dressing room, and there's like two or three full-length mirrors in front of her. So Basically, in the photo, she's in the photo, and also at least two mirrored angles of her on mirrors.
Okay.
And this is the photo straight out of the iPhone, like no modification. Every angle of her in a mirror is a completely different pose.
Oh, it's self-composited?
Arms behind her back in one angle, you know, like, I don't know, scratching her head in another one, you know, it's like that kind of thing. And it's because when you hit the button to take the picture, the phone actually takes a bunch of pictures in succession and tries to composite the best parts together. And it wasn't smart enough to know that it was looking at one person mirrored in a bunch of mirrors.
Yeah.
It thought it was a bunch of different people.
That's funny.
So it took different frames of her from different photos and jammed them all together.
I saw a commercial for that when we were watching the Thanksgiving Day parade stuff on the network TV for some Android feature. It's very much like that, where somebody's like taking a family picture and I guess it takes multiple frames, like you said, and then it uses like the person smiling from one take and the person not making a face from another take. I didn't really know how that stuff worked, but yeah, I guess taking just multiple pictures and then the phone figuring out. There's no reality anymore, Brad.
Nope.
No, there hasn't been for some time.
Nope. Truth no longer exists.
Yeah, we are in a post-truth society, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys, what phones do you have? You still have iPhones?
I'm still on the most recent iPhone SE.
What is the most recent? Is that 14?
SE is the third SE. They don't use.
Oh, sorry.
They always just call it iPhone SE, but it's the third version.
I think
it still looks like an iPhone 6.
I think that's what I have.
Yeah, like it's the last phone in the lineup with a home button.
Yes. Okay.
And,
yes.
And, and a bezel
and a single camera on the back.
Yes.
Yes. That is.
I'm on the 13 Pro.
Okay, so you have no home button, and you have three cameras on the back?
Yeah, I've got the three camera thing on the back.
Yeah, I ride or die with the SE, man. I've been pretty. That being said, when it comes time to take a picture, I use my wife's phone, which I think is like your phone, Alex, which is much. I mean, look, those things look really good.
Yes.
I think like if you take a ton of pictures and videos, probably the actual best reason to get the nice phone these days.
Yes, it is basically a really cool camera for your pocket. But I mean, what are they now? They're like $1,200 or something.
They're not cheap.
Yeah, there's definitely been price creep upwards there.
I think the SE was like $500.
Yeah, like
I got
like
it?
The top of the line SE is like $529. I think
like that's like end, right close. Where I'm like an old man. It's like basically a Cricket phone at this point, right? Like
100% there. I just want a phone that is the great thing about the SE is like it's not flashy or expensive.
Yeah,
but the guts are very fast.
Sure,
like they've started putting a lot of RAM and the fastest like the most recent chip in there. You know, so it's like you get the speed of the expensive phones without all the you know.
Think they'll stick with the SE line?
Yeah, there's rumors, plenty of rumors flying about the next SE.
Okay.
It's going to have a notch.
Oh.
Sounds okay. Like it'll basically, I'm like weirdly excited about it. After inveighing against the notch for years, I'm like, I cannot wait to, what I'm actually excited about is to go buy a phone with a notch and make a bunch of people mad.
Will it have a home button or will it have?
No, so it. I think it's the rumors right now are basically saying it's going to be an iPhone 14. Like it's just basically if you want to Google an iPhone 14, it's just going to be that.
Okay.
So it's the last design before they went from the notch to the dynamic island.
What? Oh, is that what Alex has?
No, you got a 13, right?
I have a 13 Pro. Yeah.
Okay.
God, the way they have split their product line is so confusing because I think it was only the 14 Pro that had the dynamic island. The rest of the 14 line had the notch.
I have no idea what you're
talking
about.
But as of the 15, they all have the island now, I believe.
Does that mean, is there like a floating thing at the top of your, okay.
The dynamic island is essentially like the notch at the top, sort of just like float, like detached from the coastline and floated down into the screen a few millimeters.
Okay.
Continental drift.
Yes.
And this is all iPhone stuff, and I know people always message us and chat at us about, like, yeah, get off iPhones. Like, yeah, I just don't care that enough.
I'm kind of pocketed now.
Honestly.
Yeah. Like that's what's great about the SE to me is I can stay in this ecosystem that I'm already, like, a decade into.
Yeah.
And not have to spend a ton of money.
I mean, the nice thing now is that I'm basically on an I don't know. Exactly, but it's probably every 5 year like upgrade cycle as opposed to every year or every other year, which I was doing for a while there. It's like now I'm just like, these are good enough now where it's like I could probably ride this wave for at least a few more years before I really need to go out there and upgrade again.
Yeah, I feel like phones, like, I'm not gonna say phones are boring, but they really plateaued, right? Like phones are just phones now. Like there's occasionally something interesting going on, like the Samsung Foldy phones with flexible glass and stuff, but other than that it's just like phones are just phones.
It reminds me of like a lot of the same problem that I feel like game companies are running into now when they are trying to sell why new consoles are important and why big new video games are actually impressive. It's like, yes, ray tracing is a thing that is impressive when you drill down on it and you look at it and you see the difference between what is there and what was there before. But to the average consumer who's just like, does it look that much better than the PS4 that I have right now? I feel like it's the same thing with the iPhone. It's like these are technically impressive new features that they are introducing year after year, but are they enough to get a person to spend another $1,200?
Every year,
every other year even.
Some people, but I also think they're not selling it to us anymore. That's like we're not the people. Like we still use.
Oh yeah, we might as well be dead to
them. Right? They're gonna build the next phones from our decomposed bodies. Like they are. It is. We
they
still
may
use
not even
lap
wait for them to decompose at this point.
We still use laptops and desktop PCs. Like these phones are not for us. These are for people who want to play Resident Evil 4 on their damn phone. Like that's not me. I don't think I'm going to be able to play Resident Evil 4 for a while on an SE. My guess. I don't know, Brad.
Probably
you probably know
not.
That.
No, probably not.
But there are people who's like the phone is it, right? And I always imagined we'd get to a point, and I feel like we were there for a year and a half in CES where the desktop or at the very least laptops made way for phones that docked, right?
Absolutely was with you. It was around the time the iPad got rolled out for me of like, oh, wow, this is just going to be the guts of an iMac soon, right? Like,
yeah.
You have an iMac like housing where you come home and drop your iPad in the back and that's the compute now, right?
That's yeah.
Like, that never happened, but it seems like they're now coming at it from the other way with the going to ARM on the laptops because now those the M chips, like the M1, M2 is now also in the iPad Pro. So the inside of an iPad Pro basically is the inside of a MacBook now. So like they kind of could do that if they wanted to.
I guess you'd have storage issues, right? You know, like storage is very expensive on the phone. But if you're docking and you're cloud syncing, you know, again, this is a lot of ifs because you need internet connections and all that. You could have local storage and get rid of your kind of, again, like you said, the compute, the guts.
Yeah.
Not for necessarily gaming, but for work. If you are given a work phone, you can, instead of a workstation, you could dock your phone, and then you'd basically be able to work from wherever, and they would have full control over you. You know, there's no reason not to. But yeah, you know, like, maybe some places do that, and I just don't know about it. But it really seemed like there was a window there where that's where we were headed, where you just you pop the phone in, and that's your computer. It puts the desktop up, and you have a Bluetooth keyboard or something into the phone.
Yeah, it seems like instead everything moved into the cloud. Like, they decided the way to go was just to not tether you to a device, just put everything you do online.
Or I wonder if Apple's like, look, we sell a lot of laptops, man. Like,
yeah,
we don't need to consolidate that line just yet.
Yeah.
Are they still making the Pro desktop?
Mac Pro?
Yeah.
I believe they just announced a new Mac Pro like 2 months ago, I think.
Okay. I don't keep up.
I don't pay as much attention to the Mac Pro as I should.
And they're done with the trash can style thing? That's long gone?
That's way long gone. I think they're still on the cheese grater.
Okay.
just cycling through all the household goods you can think of.
Are we back to the cheese grater? Like a G4 or G3, yeah, so G4 cheese grater?
If you Google a picture of a Mac Pro, it'll be like, you'll be like, oh my God. Like, I know what you're talking about. The old Mac Pro.
Yeah.
With
the big handles.
Yeah. The big handles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the vents on the front of this are way more violent looking. Like, it quite literally looks like a cheese grater. It's insane.
And that's the current like 2020s Mac Pro?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how new this design is.
Okay.
I want a
violent Mac Pro.
Yes, you should.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, look at it. Right.
Oh,
look at the handles. Look at the handle and the feet. Also, like, the whole thing just looks
weird.
Like, very like ruggedly industrial.
I need a pencil or something next to this. How tall is this thing? I'm seeing one next to a monitor. This looks skinny, but not.
It definitely doesn't look as like gargantuan as some of the tower, like the old Mac Pros. Looks.
Yes, right. Yeah,
yeah. I had completely forgotten. Yeah, they finally moved the ARM CPUs into the Mac Pro line with this model.
Okay.
Recently.
Wow, just all over, huh?
Yep. Yeah, I think they're completely off of Intel anything at this point.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't seem huge, man. That thing needs some cooling. I just saw the guts off of that thing. It's just all fans. All fans.
I wonder what a fully loaded one would run you.
This one, they're advertising this one here for $7,000.
I'm just clicking the highest price here.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to add Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro. I feel like that's cheating.
Oh, yeah, no software.
But just the... huh. You can add wheels to your stainless steel frame.
I want that thing rolling around.
The wheels are $400.
Of course they are.
Are they stainless steel casters? Are they super
stainless?
Nice?
Stainless steel frame with feet. Stainless steel frame with wheels plus $400.
Uh huh.
$400 for wheels.
$100 a wheel.
Fully loaded Mac Pro here, based on hardware, $12,348.
$12,000.
Yes.
$12,000.
$12,000.
Are there
you could buy a Kia for that?
Change.
Are there two chips in it? Are there two CPUs?
No, actually, in fact, the two CPU options are not that different.
Huh.
It's just more GPU cores.
For
an extra $1,000.
Right.
Look, if you're buying a Mac Pro, they know you have money.
I guess so.
They know what they can do to you.
Man, that's an expensive computer. My wife is a Mac user, and she... Gosh, I can't even remember what her computer is. Is there such thing as an iMac Pro?
No. I guess that's the Mac Studio now.
Okay, she's got the fully integrated monitor as one computer. That used to be the thing you called an iMac, where it was just a monitor was the computer. But that's her computer. I don't think it's an iMac.
No, they still use the iMac name.
They do? Okay.
In fact, I think they just refreshed those also. It's hard to keep up.
So that's what she has on her desk. And I keep trying to, for years, since I've known her, being like, gotta get you onto it. For the amount of money you spend on these things, get you a nice PC. That is not what Mac users want to hear.
No, it's not.
Not at all.
That's not the argument. Yeah. It's not the thing.
In fairness to Apple, if they deserve fairness, I think the Mac Studio is what they would say is like that's the regular people workstation.
Okay.
Which tops out at I think like 4,000, or the entry level is 2,000. Like the Mac Studio, you remember the Mac Mini?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I have one in this house somewhere.
Mac Studio is just like two or three of those taped together.
Like a GameCube, like a couple of GameCubes.
Yeah, like a Wii,
together.
Basically. Yeah.
It's approaching, if you stack like a second one on top, it would basically be a cube, and then they could put a lunchbox handle on it. I love the GameCube, man. I've been thinking a lot about, who was it? Was it Lazy Game Reviews or Action Retro or one of those channels managed to buy a new in-box GameCube recently?
Oh, that's fun.
And unboxed it on video. And there's just something weird and fetishistic to me about like luxuriating in the packing of a GameCube that's never been opened before.
It's such a weird console for them, even in the grand scheme of Nintendo, because it's one of the ones I like the most, despite the fact that it is very clearly the third tier console from that generation.
Yeah. I love the GameCube might be one of my favorite Nintendo consoles.
It's one of my favorite industrial designs any console maker has ever done.
I just had a good time with the games on it, too.
Yeah, it was a fun system. I'd have to look it up. I think you might be right. In my mind, it's the number two console, but I think the first Xbox might actually have outsold the GameCube. I was
thinking less in terms of sales and more in terms of like the games I wanted to play on it. Like obviously all the Nintendo stuff I wanted to play, but like the third party ports to the GameCube were always the worst on that platform of the three. And you know, as much as I love the tiny little discs, they had some storage issues. You know, they couldn't always put all of the game on those things.
You know what I fucking found out watching that video? The little, I don't even know what you call it, the thing in a CD-ROM, in a snap-in disk drive. Not a tray disk drive, but the type that the GameCube has with the little spinny thing.
The little nubbin in the middle?
The top loader. Yeah.
I don't know what the name is for that little nubbin.
Yeah.
Did you know that you can press that thing to eject the disk?
No.
Like in a CD case style? Like in a DVD case?
Press it down and it pops
up? It's mechanical. Like I saw it on video. That thing is mechanical. If you, it depresses into the system and just releases the disc.
I think I was just plucked it out.
Very cleanly. Same. I'd also spent the entirety of that generation plucking discs. I was very sad.
It was very easy to do, to be fair, but.
I'm trying to think of, I'm looking at pictures of a GameCube library to see like what were the games of the GameCube?
Okay. Off the top of the head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wind Waker.
Yeah, definitely.
Metroid Prime.
Definitely.
Mario Sunshine, whatever you think of it.
Uh-huh. It was a significant game for that platform regardless. Animal Crossing, the first.
Okay.
God, I guess that's right. I forgot the first Animal Crossing was on GameCube. Yep. Paper Mario.
Yep.
Pikmin.
Was the first Pikmin one on 2? There?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yes, maybe Pikmin 2 as well.
Okay.
There was the Capcom stuff, Beautiful Joe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Resident Evil 4 started there.
Capcom. Oh, God. Why am I blanking? Five? Was it the Capcom 5?
I think it was 5, because one of them didn't end up coming out. But like Killer 7 was one of those.
Yeah.
Piano 3, which no one played, but it was one of them.
Oh, I reviewed that game.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
Eternal Darkness.
I like Piano 3. You're dancing cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
Ikaruga.
I mean, to be fair, Ikaruga is one of those games that has just started appearing on every platform eventually, but at the time it was novel.
Yeah, I think that was technically an arcade game first. I don't know if we're... For the purposes of this,
I'm trying to think about what people could play in Western territories at home, you know?
Or was it, actually? I might be wrong about that. No, okay, it did come out in arcade first.
What was the Mario Kart of the GameCube?
That was Double Dash.
Yeah.
Divisive.
Okay.
Because that was the two-character one where you were, like, swapping characters on the fly.
Luigi's Mansion?
I'll say this. Oh, Luigi's Mansion, yeah, man. That was a launch game. Okay. I forget that. I will say this. I will take a GameCube over a Wii any day.
Personal preference, yes, I agree.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm looking through this list of games. They're bangers, man. This is a...
I will say, also, whatever they did for that console, my silver little GameCube, despite years of getting banged around and moved around and all that stuff, pristine condition. Looks great.
Knock on wood, yeah.
Just fine. Yeah, like... Doesn't even really have any dings on it.
There's no internal storage, right? It was cards?
It was all cards. Yeah.
It was cards. So it's basically the drive would go, right? That's the thing that would fail.
Yeah. Of course, now you would just put an ODE in one, an optical disc emulator, and just like have the entirety of the game. Well, maybe not the whole GameCube library on an SD card, but a lot of it.
Yeah.
That's what everybody does these days.
I'm still a purist. It's the reason my Xbox is still sitting here in pieces. I still want to put an original, like, new old stock or something kind of hard drive in there and get it back to how it was, instead of putting something that, you know, very easy to mod it so I could just play all the, have all the games on a hard drive. But I don't know. It's something about original console, functional original consoles, even though as time marches on, the chances of all of them failing.
Oh yeah.
Go on. Like, I'm scared. I've got all my old consoles still here and I'm scared to, like, I just feel like I'm one powering them on away from something breaking on each of them.
Yeah. I've been sitting here mulling, just going cycling through all the consoles I have to see which ones still boot up and which ones don't. The only ones I know don't work anymore are my original NES and my original PlayStation. Those are, the PlayStation still kind of boots up, but it has a real hard time reading discs. The NES just doesn't do shit anymore.
Yeah, we should take a look at your NES, because I feel like, I was going to say the cart-based systems, at the very least, don't have as many moving parts, so maybe that's like a maybe a good cleaning job away from
it's
working.
It's possible. It was a very, very well used NES. I really put that thing through its paces as a kid.
Yeah, like the contacts on the slot and the carts being dirty.
Yeah,
or NES is getting old enough that they're going to need to be recapped soon. Maybe
Maybe, but even then, maybe that's not the worst. I have to look inside. My NES was opened up. I cleaned it not too long ago, and I can't remember inside if it's all a solid, solid state kind of mess in there, or if there's through hole caps on it, which, you know, may not be the worst. It's the internal storage and the drives that I always worry about. Like, that's internal storage went on my Xbox. That's what killed that thing, and that thing has a, it's not encrypted. It's like paired to the Xbox.
I can't remember what it is. Yeah, there's something you have to do to the drive to get it to work.
Yeah, and there's a way to do it, which sounded awesome. I just haven't had the time to do it, where you can use a Raspberry Pi and some leads and attach them to specific pins on, I think, on the chip of the Xbox. So then when it boots, you can steal what the signal it's looking for, like the ID it's looking for, and then you can flash that to a drive, which I think is so fucking awesome. I really want to do it. I just haven't had the time to do it. To try and get it back.
It's weird because, like, I have one of those mini NESs, and, like, I've already obviously flashed that thing and put all the damn games on it. So it's not like I'm poor for any way to play NES games in a fairly accurate way, because those controllers they sell are basically the ones you had on the old platform. But, like, I just, something about the idea of having an NES that still works is nice to me, to the point where, like, despite having that, that has not stopped me from buying used old NES cartridges every now and again. Like, when I was out there in California a few weeks ago, I didn't know there was a retro video game store in my hometown, but apparently one opened up in the last, like, 5 years, and I had just never seen it before. So I went in there, happened to be their anniversary party. So I went in, and they had a bunch of stuff on sale, and I bought, like, a handful of, like, used NES cartridges of games I just never had, but I remember renting when I was a kid.
So
I was like, oh yeah, Golgo 13. I never really dug into this game that hard, and I could just play this on emulation, but what if I had a copy of Golgo 13? Why not? Platoon. That's a dumb game that shouldn't exist. I should grab this for $7. Why not?
I mean, there's something to there only being a certain number of Platoon carts in the world, and now you have
that
one.
Work, especially.
Yeah, and now you have one. I think, Brad, we mentioned this somewhere on the stream where, you know, people are gutting carts to get the, you know, insides or the shells or reap. Sometimes, right, you there's a certain cart that's good for the, is it the Super Nintendo, the SNES that has the most memory on it that you use to build those flash carts out of, right? The ones,
I don't know.
I think there's one that's like, because some of the carts had more RAM in them than others, right? Like, and I think there's one particular one is the one you want to use to make your flash cart so that it can play all the games, especially ones that need more RAM. You know, I think that's interesting stuff and fun, but I'm never going to be someone who collects video games. Like, I have enough collections.
I'm not trying to start, like, collection. No.
And so digital has been great for me. Games take up a lot of storage. I have more. I have other dumb things I collect, and that's fine.
Me too.
So, like, that's good. But There is.
But what if you had a copy of Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego for the NES for some reason because they had a box copy?
Fodor's in there? Is that box so big because there's like a Fodor's?
There normally would be. So obviously this was not a full price purchase. It was like $20 in the box, but it does have the manual at least.
Okay.
And the cart in the sleeve, but it did not have the encyclopedia that came with it.
Okay.
Though to be fair, it was an edutainment game aimed at like 8-year-olds. So at this point, if I were to play it, I think I could get through it without needing the encyclopedia.
Oh, that sounds like a challenge. That sounds like okay. Patron's choice stream for January. Can Alex get through? Is it Where in Time or Where in the World?
That's Where in Time.
Okay.
That and Where in the World are the ones I played the most of. So yeah, I guess it's time to find out how much I remember about Victor Hugo.
I just searched Carmen Sandiego in my collection of old games.
Uh-huh.
There are versions in here for. It'd probably be faster to list what there are not versions for. Actually,
sure.
Apple II, C64, NES, Super Nintendo, Genesis, TurboGrafx CD.
Oh wow!
The Master System. There's a lot of Carmen Sandiego.
Almost all of them were on DOS or on Nintendo platforms, as far as I know.
I had it for the Commodore.
Okay.
That's where I played mine.
DOS is actually where I played most of mine. I just, you know, I'm never going to find I can emulate a working DOS version. I'm never going to find a box copy of that anywhere.
I don't know. Don't never say never.
But that was like one of the first video games. Like the DOS version of Where in Time and Carmen Sandiego was one of the first games I ever got for the computer.
Oh, wow. I think I only had Where in the World. I don't know if I ever had Where in Time. I guess Where in Time, right, wouldn't have a Fodor's. That's the encyclopedia. Some other thing?
No, it would had. What did it have? It had the New American Desk Encyclopedia is what the box says it has included.
Okay. Carmen Sandiego kind of has, it's around still. Like they make.
There was an animated series not that long ago.
Yeah. Where Carmen Sandiego is like the good guy.
Yeah. They kind of Beetlejuiced her at some point
and
made her into more of a pleasant rogue as opposed to the person stealing the Eiffel Tower.
There's only so many times you can steal the Eiffel Tower.
It was my favorite shit growing up. Like, as edutainment games went especially, I loved those games, and that game show was, like, a regular watch for me.
Yeah. Did you have to memorize the answers Jeopardy style? I can't remember on the game show. You didn't get any source material or anything, right?
No, there was no source material. It was just clues, and then at the end you had to do the big run where you were, like, had to put the flags on the different countries on whatever continent you got. You rolled for that run.
Man, people were thinking. They were trying to just make any game they could.
Yeah. Shout out to Lynn Thigpen.
I do not collect video games, but consoles. I will hold on to my old consoles because I think the hardware, and I'm going to call the game software, hardware more interesting to me than the software at this point. Like, I think, like, one console, if I could build a nice shelf, and I've looked up this place for this nice shelf with a console and one controller next to it, like, would be no power supply, no nothing, would be a nice display to have.
Yeah.
My biggest gap is I was not a Sega person, so I never had a Master System or Genesis or Saturn.
Dreamcast.
Yeah, or Dreamcast. I never had any of those. I've inherited some of those from, like, my brother, and we got a Genesis later on in life, and the one that came with the CD drive later on. But like those are forced collections. Those don't have like nostalgia for me. That's like.
Yeah,
I don't have a TurboGrafx in this house. I don't have a Jaguar.
Very few people do, to be fair.
Oh, I had a Jaguar and I gave it to Giancarlo. a Jaguar CD.
Wow.
They were given to me by Joe Fielder.
Okay.
And I never even turned them on. I also didn't have any games for it.
Okay.
And at some point I was like, this is just taking up space in here. I found out recently Jaguars are actually quite rare because they just didn't make that many of them because it was a giant flop.
Yeah, it's the sales window for that console was pretty short.
So they're like actually pretty expensive if you want to buy one. Not that I do, but it went to a better home.
Yeah. Someone who would actually appreciate it.
But like I would put like a line, the things that I would do is like I would put a line of the things I had from Nintendo, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question is, in doing that, I never owned a Virtual Boy. Do I stick
anyone else?
Do I stick a, my cousin? I think did or had one. Or
we found the one.
Yeah. Do you get one just to have the complete, not complete, and I don't mean novelty, weird stuff, but, you know, like mainline Nintendo. Do you get one just to put it on the shelf to be like, yeah, that happened?
I mean, if you get a Virtual Boy, do you then have to go get every game and watch they made?
No, definitely not. Like
those are on the same level.
Yeah. I think it is.
I mean, yes, the Virtual Boy is cartridge-based, at least. It has that going for it, but...
Like, no power, you don't have to have a power glove up there. You don't have to have the track and field mat up there. Like,
I would sooner have those than I would have a Virtual Boy, personally.
I just, like, hardware wise.
Give me a Super Scope. I'll fucking display that all day long.
I think I might still have, my parents might still have the Super Scope. It's probably got, like, you know, D cell batteries rotting away in it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever had the Zapper. I didn't get the Nintendo with the Duck Hunt and the Zapper.
I did.
Okay.
That was mine.
Yeah, I didn't have that. And I didn't have the Gyromite Rob. I didn't have that either.
No.
I've got a pre-ban Zapper.
Ooh, like pre-orange?
The pre-orange one.
Me too. I have the gray one.
The gray one. I think I got into Nintendo fairly late. So mine, I think, was a one controller, no Mario console. I think it was
just the hardware.
I think it was a Nintendo with one controller, and that was it. I think
probably in the late run of that thing.
Yeah, like we were pretty late getting to it, and I remember having to rent Mario Brothers, so like it didn't have the game.
Okay.
Well, now I've found a list of every permutation of the NES that was sold.
It must have had two controllers. You know what? I bet Nintendo didn't make a one controller. I bet it was two controllers at the time.
Maybe one just got lost or stolen.
I was going to say, because I remember having two when we'd rent games, and I feel like I wouldn't buy we didn't buy like a separate one. Probably had two controllers, no game.
Dude, the idea of two controllers packed in with a console is so quaint.
And a kick-ass game.
A game and two controllers?
The game. The system seller. It's amazing. I mean, granted, those controllers were probably a lot cheaper back then than they are
they
now.
Were. But yeah, if you got that pack-in with the light gun, I mean, look, the light gun is what sold me on the Nintendo Entertainment System. My friend David, when I was in first grade, got one. And I remember sitting in his house playing Duck Hunt in Hogan's Alley, and my eyes were just like saucers. Like, you could shoot a gun at the TV and it works? Oh, my God.
Was that a combo cart at that point with Duck Hunt on it?
The Duck Hunt Mario one was a combo cart.
Okay. Yeah. My cousin had the Rob, and I always thought that was kind of
it's dumb.
Yeah.
Rob was kind of a failure, I think. Like, it didn't work well, you know.
Right.
Like they broke easily and just kind of didn't work properly. My cousin also had one.
He just like dropped weights on buttons, right? To move.
Yeah, I kind of like, yeah, would like lower its hands to press buttons or something.
Like, I mean, it's spinning wheels.
Forgive me if I'm misremembering the lore here, but my recollection was that Rob only existed to convince retailers that they weren't just selling game consoles because of the big game crash in the previous years.
That could be true.
Like it was a toy?
Well, yeah, it was, hey, this is a toy, not just a video game.
Yeah, system. It was intended to like not scare people off who were just like, well, video games are dead, so obviously I'm not going to buy this.
I thought, yeah, you're probably right. I feel like I've heard that before too on one of those like, this is how this thing got made things. Mm-hmm. But I also thought I remember something about you could play by yourself. Like you could, this is your robot buddy. This is Rob.
Finally.
Yeah, I could just sit here and play Devil Dribble against... I think it just played Gyromite, right? I don't know if Rob played anything else. I didn't have a Rob.
There were like one or two other games. I can't remember.
Nintendo.
That it worked with, I think.
This was a long time ago. I was still in the single-digit age range at that point, so forgive me if I don't remember everything that happened around that time.
Brad, do you still have your early Nintendo?
I need to look into that, actually. I should.
Okay.
But I couldn't tell you where. It's got to be in my parents' basement somewhere.
Is there like
a lot of boxes down there.
Is there a bin of games or anything, too?
Those, surely, God, I hope, are also boxed up somewhere. I never owned that many games per system.
I didn't either. Not until Not until Xbox, probably. Same, right? Yeah, like when you were working in the industry, you probably got it.
Once I both had my own money and also was working in the industry, I started getting more games, but...
Alex is holding up his Nintendo, his yellowed,
very yellowed,
sun-kissed Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Getting my hands on hardware was all, I know I've said this before, like it was always my priority to just get as many consoles as I could and then figure out the games later by borrowing them or renting them or whatever.
It was like a renting heyday. Alex, you took off the secret panel on the bottom. Has the world ever figured out what that is?
I truly have no idea.
I think it was some kind of feature connector that ended up never getting used.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay. Secret. We should take a look at that and see if we can restore that thing.
I would love to. Yeah. Absolutely. Because, I mean, it's not working now. So, like, what's the worst you could do? Break it more?
That's right. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, you got it. I'll break that thing more. Yeah. God,
I just use this thing so much. Like, this is the years between, I'm going to say, like, second grade and up until the Super Nintendo finally showed up under a tree in Christmas. Like, all I did was play this thing.
I think for me, my Super Nintendo probably has the strongest neural pathways and memories. Like, the Super Nintendo is the one I probably rented. The renting really kind of matured when I had the Super Nintendo. I feel like renting
during, that was the rental era, 100%.
Yeah, so like I was renting for $2, renting games all the time. $2.
Yeah.
Man. It's like $5.
Wait,
where I lived,
it
really
went up to $5 at some point at the Hollywood Video I used to go to. But like in the early days, I remember $2 or $3 would get you like, you know, at least a few nights with a game.
Yeah, you didn't have it for that long. Like some
two nights.
Yeah.
For us, I was like, I think it was $5 for two nights. But that was at the Blockbuster. That was after Blockbuster ran all the mom and pop places out of town. Like I started renting NES games at a local shop first.
Yeah,
and it might have been cheaper there.
$2 at my local place. You got them for a night or two. It had the little card behind it. It was the, you know, game box with a rubber band with a card behind it. And you'd go in there and like you didn't have the money. I would stop in there after school. And if I didn't have the money, I'd take the card out and put it behind the shit game so that nobody would take it. And then so I can go home, back in and get the card. And then they'd give you the game. My first game was, you know, they just put them in a manila envelope with the fucking instructions. Then later on they got those plastic, like, made for the game things, those like plastic cases.
Never get the little janky photocopied, like home photocopied manual.
I got those eventually. And once things matured, and then I feel like they just didn't give you the manual at all. Like, you know,
because they lost them all by that point.
By that point, it was so wrecked. Like I have a Strider photocopied manual that somebody else wrote some codes in on the back of.
I was still renting kind of into the N64 era, and then that felt like it just dropped off a cliff after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely rented a good number of PlayStation games.
I was going to say PlayStation is the one I would rent the console and the games a lot. And then it was renting around for the Xbox? Like, I feel like I never rented an Xbox game.
Probably. I mean, Blockbuster was still around.
Yeah, were they renting Xbox games?
I would assume so.
Probably.
Okay.
You know, like, even Gamefly was a thing for a good long while. And I
That's
think still,
true.
Still is in operation, technically. But, like, there was definitely the rental business was still going, I think.
You know, I had a Gamefly account, so I guess that counts as renting, right?
God, yes. Remember the complimentary Gamefly account?
I never did a Redbox thing. I know that was a big one for a lot of folks. I did Gamefly. I think I still have a Gamefly game because they sent me two once. And it's like, you sent me, I think it's Mr. Mosquito. And like, that's not what I ordered. And they're like,
score.
Yeah. And so I don't know. But I thought Gamefly was kind of neat. It was fun. You know, you get your game and you're like, cool. I just popped this thing back in the mail. Like,
I hear about Gamefly these days, I feel like, is when Wario 64 occasionally pops up to be like, hey, they're selling UMDs that they still have lying around on the floor somewhere if you want to buy them for like a dollar. That's kind of it.
I think UMDs might be the least physical media I have for a console. I think I have three.
I have slightly fewer Vita games than I have PSP games on like actual physical.
Oh, yeah. I think for the Vita, I just bought a lot of digital ones, so maybe I'm just...
I have 5 physical Vita games, I think 2 of which I actually bought, and the other 3 were just ones that, like, no one wanted.
Still got a copy of Tron on UMD.
The way it was meant to be watched.
I think I have Crisis Core.
Sure. Yes.
Lumines beyond UMD?
Definitely. I mean, it was a launch game.
Okay.
So absolutely could have been.
So you might.
I think it was the only way to get it for.
It was initially.
So I think I had Crisis Core and Lumines, and maybe one or two other games. But you might as well have just like hot glued Lumines in that game and that thing, because was in that system pretty much all the time.
I still play Lumines. God, what is the newest one? Or the newest? Is it just remastered?
Think so.
Yeah, it's just I still play Lumines Remastered on the Switch occasionally when I'm traveling, just out of nostalgia.
Man,
for playing Lumines game. On a handheld.
Remember Rich Gallop being a fiend at Lumines? Mm-hmm.
And he was very good at Lumines.
And he's like one of those people who could just go infinitely, just kind of saw the pattern and was just like,
yes.
I remember spending a lot of time being like, yeah, no, there's a pet. They just got to do the same thing over and over. I don't know why I keep messing this up. It's just the same thing. And then there was always that one level or two that would just break my whole thing apart. What a great game.
Yeah.
Yes. I've still got the Daxter PSP 2000 bundle new in box in the closet.
Okay.
It's the silver PSP 2000 and a copy of Daxter.
It mint new in box.
Like never been opened.
Oh, man. Do they have exploding batteries?
The only bummer is there's a little plastic cutout window in the front so you could see the PSP.
Yeah.
And at some point, a bug found its way into that box.
Ew.
And got smushed right in the middle of that plastic window.
So is it factory sealed in a way that you can't? Okay. It's got a sticker.
Factory sealed.
Okay.
It's factory sealed, so I wouldn't open it. But I'm sure that's going to take the grade down like a full letter.
I disagree, man. I think that makes it rarer. You know, it's sacrificed. A special fun prize that only you got.
I don't know if it's worth that much. Here's one on eBay for $650.
I mean, that's
not nothing.
It's not nothing. It's not nothing, but it's not like send your kids to college money.
No. That thing was what, like $249, $300?
I don't know what that would have cost at the time.
Well, how much was the regular old?
What was $299? Does that seem right?
That seems right to me. And then it was another $6,000 for the memory. That's stupid. $249
at launch for the PSP.
The PSP memory was so ridiculously expensive. That stupid Sony proprietary bullshit.
Good old Magic Gate.
Oh my gosh, it's
the worst.
I remember when I bought that thing and they were like, oh, it's going to be like whatever it was. It was like $40 or $50 or something for like the memory. And I was like, are you kidding? The Duo? Yeah, is that what it was?
Memory Stick Duo, yeah.
Memory Stick Duo. Ugh. What a pain in the butt.
Pro Duo? I can't remember.
What a pain in the butt.
Pro Duo, yeah.
Man. How much is the current PS5? $499 still to get in?
It's $499 for the disc when they raised the digital price on the Slim to $449.
Okay. All right. And what was the most expensive one? $600
for it would have been PS3.
PS3?
Top end PS3 came out at $599 in 2007 dollars.
In 2000. That's a spicy meatball, man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hey, you'll want to get a second job just to afford it.
Yeah. Was that their actual marketing?
Oh, yeah. No, that was straight up the... That was Kutaragi, right? It wasn't Kaz Hirai. I believe it was Kutaragi.
Yeah, that was Kutaragi era.
Kutaragi that straight up said, like, you'll want to work a second job to be able to get this thing.
Jesus. That's amazing. I don't remember that.
But why would I do that when there are no games?
Oh, they're just aging in your digital locker.
That didn't go great for them.
Kutaragi was never the most, what's the word I'm looking for?
Diplomatic.
Measured. Diplomatic, yeah. He was a hardware
engineer.
Guy.
Yes, he was hardware guy.
He was kind of charismatic. Like, you know, there was a charisma.
Well, yeah, he had vision, but then all of a sudden he didn't, I think.
It
was like the PS3 wasn't even going to have a GPU in it until the very last minute, and they kind of shoved one in there in a half-assed way. Like, he was a big believer in doing things on the CPU, I'll say that. I think he kind of had an idea about what hardware should be that was not in step with the way things were going.
What's the PS? Is that the Emotion
Engine? Emotion Engine was the PS2.
PS2. What's the PS3 one that was?
I don't know that they put a cutesy name on it.
Didn't they?
Oh, the Cell.
It's the Cell. Yeah. Oh, right. It's going to be in your fridge.
Yes. Because the Cell was the big partnership with, I think, Toshiba and IBM, right? That was going to be in everything. So it was supposed to be a much bigger thing.
Yeah. Imagine a world where that thing worked and like the compute power of these things worked together locally on your fridge's help processing kill zone.
I was just looking. I wish I could remember the damn name of it. It was a prototype, so it didn't have a very memorable name, but Sony made a prototype that was like 12 PlayStation 2s put together.
Okay.
Or no, PS3s.
There were farms of PS3s. Like people were doing like render farms or the folding at home stuff. Yeah.
I can't remember. Was it? Yeah, because you could install Linux on the PS3. I think it was the PS2 where all the FUD, the moral panic about using PS2s for like missile guidance happened, right?
Oh, I don't remember that.
I think it was the PS2.
That's right.
Gosh. Hang on. Should I just Google 12 PS2s taped together?
Sure. Hey.
It was something they brought to like SIGGRAPH, the graphics research convention.
Okay.
And it could do like, I think it could run like the big deal was that it could run 1080p in real time. Like it could render some like Final Fantasy tech demo at 1920, 1080 in 60 FPS.
That dinosaur.
With 12 PS2s put together.
Huh.
I wish I could remember the name of that thing. It was so cool looking. It was just like just a giant box where you can see just like these rows of not off the shelf PS2s, but you could tell there were 12 PS2 boards in there.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I it's killing me that I can't remember the name of that thing.
I wonder, is there any apples to apples comparison for those things to like a power of a PS5 now, or is there just such different beasts?
Everybody like tries to use like teraflops as some kind of like common measure of performance, but I don't think that's really
what bit era are we in now?
I think 64 still.
Just hanging out.
Unless you want to talk about like memory bandwidth, in which case
know.
I think like on the 3080, it's like a 384-bit bus.
I feel like we lost something when we stopped doubling when we went from 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit, and then it just kind of fell off.
64-bits.
So like Nintendo, we're still in the Nintendo 64 era, is what you're saying.
That's correct. Yes.
That was the last
PlayStation
console.
A PlayStation 5 is really no different from a Nintendo 64. When you get down to it. I just found it. It was the GS Cube. The Sony GS Cube is just it looks cool as hell because it's got this big row of lights on the top of it that I assume light up based on what each of the PS2s inside is doing.
Huh. Oh yeah, look at this thing. That's cool.
It's cool as hell. One word. GS Cube.
Yeah.
Oh, 16. I'm sorry. It was not 12. It was 16 PS2s.
It's like a big monolith.
Yeah.
That thing's awesome. Cool. Is there just one? Do they like?
They may very, very well just have made one. I'm not sure.
Man,
I want to own the cube.
I'm trying to find like. Well, you can find it if you Google. There's info out there about like what they showed on it. I think.
Yeah.
I think it seems like they might have been pitching it for in the VFX industry, visual effects. It didn't quite catch on.
I saw a thing asking for an ants, real time ants. I guess the 3D movie demo on it. I don't know.
Yeah, that was the golden age of tech demos on consoles.
Yep.
Man.
Rubber Ducks on the PS2, the 128 Marios, bring back tech demos, please.
You know, Unreal still does a tech demo.
Yeah, sometimes. Yes. Like Unreal is, Epic's kind of like the one company still doing nice tech demos.
Where's that game?
That's not true. I'm sorry. I should correct myself. Like Unity just put out a new one. Like other people do actually do that.
Sony and
Nintendo don't.
No, they don't care anymore. They lost the love. What was the That's one right. with the rainy like bounty hunter guy? It was an Unreal one. It was like in the rain. Something with a P. The Patriarch.
I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the name of that.
It was almost like a Constantine. There was like a monster or something. He was like smoking in the rain.
Was that an Unreal Engine 3 demo? Was that Samaritan?
Samaritan.
That's an Unreal Engine 3 demo.
Man.
Wow.
I remember Samaritan.
That was a cool looking, at least at the time, in my head canon, that thing still looks amazing.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It still looks pretty good. Like it's, I'd say we have surpassed it now, but not by like that much.
Like a real-time running game has surpassed it. Like you could.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
You know, because I feel like the demos never look. The games never look as good as the demos until maybe end of life.
It's like a generation after the tech demos, you'll start getting games that look that way.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Maybe Cyberpunk looks better than this. It's definitely in like, I would say, man, the lighting is really good on this Samaritan demo, but yeah,
it looks pretty good. I mean, not to burn GTA 6 talk for the main podcast, but GTA 6 looks pretty good.
Yes, it does.
I didn't see that trailer yet, so I know it's floating around out
You've
there.
You've got something to look forward to.
All right. Well, hopefully it's made in Unreal Engine 3.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's made in 16 Unreal Engine 3s taped together.
taped together. Yes, the Rockstar Cube. That is going to do it for this week's Ramblecast. Again, happy December to everybody out there.
We hope it is anyway.
We hope you're having the best December you can have out there as we kind of barrel into it. Thank you, Alex. Good luck with your show.
Thank you.
Do people break a leg? Blister a finger? I don't know.
Yeah, I've got blisters on me fingers.
Brad Shoemaker, thank you very much. Have a good one. I'm going down rabbit holes to see where you can find the cube, the GS cube. If anybody's got one, contact Brad. He's on the Discord.
Yes. I'll give you $50 for it.
Bring me your cube.
Maybe he'd be willing to trade a Jak and Daxter PSP with
maybe.
Bug.
Maybe.
For a GS cube.
That's right, yes. Free copy of Bug.
A bug inside the Jak and Daxter verse. Mm-hmm. You can't get that anywhere else. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Don't forget, we got the Watchcast going on with Twin Peaks. We'll have episode one is up. We'll have episode 2 and 3 next week if you're keeping track, which you should be. Come join us for the Twin Peaks nonsense that is going on in that universe. It's like 12 Twin Peaks taped together. It's that level of bananas. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye.